This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Okay, so we get the coordinators, the media does, on Thursdays. So I know, like, the process should be, you know, by Tuesday we flush the previous game and we're on to New England, and generally speaking we are. But unfortunately we don't get to hear from Bobby Slowick or Matt Burke or Frank Ross until Thursday. Yeah. So I'm curious some of their thoughts on some of the things that happened on Sunday, especially in a close game against a good team where there were a lot of little micro decisions to be made in that game that impacted or could have negatively impacted the outcome of the game for the Texans. And so, Bobby, and the big one, I think, for Bobby Slowick was some of the play-calling decision-making down the stretch in that game, where the Texans, with under a minute to go, had the ball in Kaimi Fairbairn's field goal range, which is basically in the building. If he's anywhere in the building, he can kick a field goal. But they had it, like, at the 36-yard line of Buffalo. They were in position to kick a game-winning field goal, and it's third down. And if you just, conventional wisdom was, well, you just run the football here. You got all your timeouts.
They're on the 39-yard line.
39, okay.
So at that point,
it's about a 57-yard field goal.
Yeah, 56 or 50. Yeah, 57-yard field goal.
Yeah.
And that's the key. The key thing is, okay, 39-yard line. It's a 56-yard field goal. What do you do there? Do you just run? You need time to expire. You know, like, what do you do? And Bobby Slowick chose the pass. They didn't execute it properly, and CJ gets an intentional grounding,
which pushes him back 10 yards. They lose the down, so you don't. It's not third down again. Now it's fourth down. Now you got to punt the football. Now, fortunately, they got the ball back, and we all know how it ended. They end up winning the game anyways, despite that poor execution or poor play call, depending on how you look at it. Maybe both.
Well, it was miscommunication there, and somebody that was supposed to be there wasn't there yet.
Right,
so,
right. So here's Bobby Slowick yesterday on the decision-making at the end of the Buffalo game.
We shouldn't ever get a grounding call there, so that starts with me. Like, I got to just do a better job at communicating to everybody what we're trying to get done. Like, that can't happen in that. We prided ourselves on we work situations all the time. And for a year and a half, I'd say we're a good situational football team. I think that's shown itself in how we handle 2 minutes. We're very good 2-minute offense. More of that is situations than anything. Like, people think it's going on the ball. A lot of 2 minute, you're not going on the ball at all. It's just handling situations when they come up. But as it pertains to that specific one, you know, like, I would look at that similar to the end of the half at Indy. Like, I botched that one. You know, there's schematically, you're expecting them to try to knock you out of field goal range. So you're pretty confident most coordinators in the NFL are going to all out pressure you. So the run game as a starting point, you have to feel confident if you call a run. At the very least, you're not losing 3 yards. Because that's, you know, it's risky when they're bringing everybody. Now, there's ways we can definitely make that happen. And then in the pass game, obviously, we got to be able to go execute.
So in that moment, what they're really thinking is, okay, it's a 56-yard field goal. If we run the ball here, yes, we're going to definitely soak some time up. But there's also a really good chance, especially given our ability to run the ball, that it's going to be a tackle for a 3-yard loss.
Right, it's going to turn into, like, a 60-yard field goal.
Like, so many plays have been in recent memory. So you dial up something that you think is at least an easy completion, and maybe you get some extra yardage out of it, but at the very least, you don't actually go backwards again. So I'm a little bit more... It's frustrating because philosophically it makes sense, and yet you're hamstrung by your inability to even just run for a stalemate right there.
Yeah.
I like, yeah, okay, great. If it's a zero blitz, then so be it. But there's teams that can still at least expect to get a stalemate there.
Yeah.
That he chose the less evil option there, and it ended up being the absolute worst worse. It sounds like he was saying at the end of the Colts game, or end of the first half of the Colts, where everything got all screwed up. Okay, I botched that, but in this, I feel like he stands by his decision to pass there. They just got to execute it better.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year, season for the Texans for end of half and end of game situations. I feel like there's been no in between. They've either executed them flawlessly or they've done just some crazy, odd, weird things, whether it's a singular play like that one we're talking about now, mm-hmm. whether it's just a misunderstanding or botching of a situation like it was at the end of the half against the Colts, or for me, the general approach at the end of halves is something I just don't... I think D'Amico is more conservative at the end of halves than I would like him to be. It's just a philosophical disagreement on my behalf. And yet there have been times at the end again. I mean, look, the end of the Buffalo game, they only had to execute one play, but they did it fine. They set Kaimi up. The end of the Jacksonville, the last drive of the Jacksonville game was a masterpiece. The way they emptied the timeouts of the Jags while still going down and scoring a touchdown was amazing.
I mean, a lot of that, it's tough because when it does work well, it looks like, oh, yeah, that's the mess. But when it doesn't work out, it feels like, oh, you guys are so conservative. You're so, how are you doing this? And yet, all those examples where they do suck the clock down and take a possession away from the other team, that's part of it, is they're driving down the field at the end of a half. Part of their philosophy is, all right, we want to be sure we take a possession away from these guys. They don't have a realistic chance to score at the end because you only get 12 possessions in a game. If you can steal a possession from a team, that's a big, big deal. And I think they look at that as a bit of a victory, too. Whether the Texans score points or not, they're trying to walk that fine line. And it's frustrating because you're greedy in the moment. You want points, damn it.
Yep. Well, and I think especially, too, when you get the ball, talking about the end of half stuff, when you get the ball to start the second half, also, that factors in. Like, okay, let's go get some points, make sure they don't get the ball at all, and plus, we get the ball. We're getting two possessions in a row here.
And we're keeping them off the field for, like, an actual 45 minutes to an hour of actual real time.
But
so with Bobby, this is where I'm torn with him, because I love his press conferences. I think it's very obvious and evident that he has a really deep level of understanding of the game. Yeah. And a lot of times, though, he'll be saying things that I 100% agree with, and they are 100% true, and yet I don't like it. Because at the end of the day, it's all without substance if you can't actually execute all of this highfalutin philosophy that you're talking about.
Yep.
That it's... you know what it feels like, I guess? It feels most like when a new basketball coach takes over, Udoka, for instance, and you have to start, you're trying to do the basics, and you've got a philosophical belief that you want to get good at doing these certain things. And sometimes you got to take two steps backwards to take three steps forward with all of that, and it feels frustrating and plodding. And yet the vision is, like, you got to do all this boring bad stuff to get to where your vision is. That's where Bobby Slowik is with the run game right now. And I think it's that there's part of you that wants to say, just let CJ cook. There's just sit back there and gun and go. But the vision is that you've got a well-constructed offense where the run game and the pass game are tied together and they complement each other, and they're just not there yet because they can't execute in the run game, and it screws everything else all up.
Yeah, I think the other thing to point out there, too, because we have people texting in, just take a knee. Why not just take a knee then? And if you're worried about losing yard, well, for one, if you take a knee, you do lose a yard. I think the other thing, we're getting a little... We're starting to take maybe Kaimi Fairbairn a little bit for granted as well. It was a 56-yard field goal. They're also trying to gain 4 or 5 yards there to make the field goal a little bit easier. Like, that was the purpose of passing the ball there, was to try to pick up some extra yardage to make life easier for Kaimi Fairbairn. We can't live in a world, people, where, I get it, they had to set up a 59-yarder at the end of the game because they had no time left. That was just what you were dealing. You had 7 seconds. And you had to move the ball as many yards as you could and still have time on the clock for the final field goal. But we can't have it. What people are saying, take a knee or just run the ball into the line or whatever. Like, you can't play for a 56-yard field. I know Kaimi's really, really good. The two things that I feel like, you and I had this conversation off air a little earlier. The two things that I feel like we're starting to take for granted a little bit as Texan fans. One, Kaimi Fairbairn's ability to bang a field goal from anywhere inside 60 yards. And to, like, this is real. What Kaimi is doing this year is freaking amazing. He's got 8 50-plus yard field goals. He's got 2 59 yarders, including one at the gun to win the game last Sunday. The other thing we're starting to take for granted a little bit is CJ Stroud's right arm and just how ridiculously accurate he is under duress and how easy it is. And I'll use last night's game as an example. In the second half of that game, Brock Purdy was awesome in the first half. In the second half, he wasn't as good. He wasn't as accurate. He was missing what looked to me to be easy throws. And I would rewind and I go, okay, was that an easy throw? Or do I think that's an easy throw because I watch CJ Stroud every week?
You know? Well, then even, somebody
makes everything,
somebody,
who makes everything look easy, CJ.
I was talking to somebody who was talking about the Texans receivers, and they were saying, like, well, it just seems like they get a lot of separation and they're just so open. And some of that is that because CJ throws with such good anticipation and because he has such good ball placement. Like, I did that cut up yesterday of Stephon Diggs. It was the receptions this season that Stephon Diggs has had while CJ Stroud is under pressure. And it does. Every single one of them, it looks like, wow, look at how much room there is. But so many of them are either late in the down where CJ's had to scramble and create some time, or it's that CJ gets rid of the ball. He's starting his throwing motion before the receiver's even into his break. And it's that one minuscule moment where there's great separation and they get the ball. Yeah, you get a little spoiled with that.
You do.
The other part of it, I mean, yeah, the Kaimi Fairbairn part, it's not like the Warriors at their peak were scheming just to get Steph Curry a 35-point three-pointer.
You know,
like, just because
threes.
He can, yeah, just because he can hit one from 38 feet doesn't mean that that's ideally what they're trying to get. You can't bank on that all the time.
Well, and the same people say, like, there's a text here, why not? He's money from beyond 50 yards. That's the same person who, if they played that conservatively and played for a 56-yard field goal and they missed it, they'd be like, how can you play for a 56-yard field goal? So, no, I disagree, sir.
I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the decision. It all comes back to a lot of the issues that I have with Bobby Slowick as an offensive coordinator have zero to do with his play calling. I think his play calling is just fine. It's the problem is they can't execute, and that's on Bobby Slowick. He's not the offensive play caller. He's the offensive coordinator. And the run blocking is not, it's not good enough.
Yep.
And that's on Bobby Slowick.
We'll get to the Circle of Swarm in about probably 7 or 8 minutes here. The weekly Circle of Swarm. Seth and I each pick the 3 swarmiest Texan players for the upcoming week based on performance, recent and year-long. As far as the card this weekend goes in the NFL, I like stacking this like a wrestling card. You guys know that. The undercard, for me, the undercard this week, Seth, are the 2 games involving other AFC South teams I'll keep an eye on. Jacksonville and Chicago in London, 2 teams the Texans have played already. And then Indy at Tennessee. Tennessee coming off a bye week. Probably a better team than their record if Will Levis just couldn't, would stop throwing pick sixes. And then the Colts, it looks like Anthony Richardson is back for the Colts this week. So I'm kind of hoping for Anthony Richardson to be terrible so we get a little more of that play Joe Flacco vibe that the Cleveland Browns had to deal with last year. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, this is what I really want of Anthony Richardson is a continuation of what he's done in his career, which is make enough really incredible throws that you continue to be tantalized by the upside. Well, maybe underplaying exactly just how erratic and bad he is, not just in his actual throwing, but some of his decision-making. So I need the Colts to really string this out for like 3 more years.
Yes.
Or just for them to think that, well, if he could just stop getting injured pretty much every third game that he plays in his football career in college
something.
Or the NFL, that, if we could just get him over that hump, Just play 4 or 5 consecutive games in a row without getting injured.
The mid card for me this weekend, 2 games. Cleveland at Philadelphia. Yeah, I know it's 1-4 against the Philly team that's shaky right now. The loser of this game, their head coach will be sitting right next to Doug Peterson on the hot seat list. If Kevin Stefanski, and I think Stefanski's actually a good coach, but if they start 1-5 and they're married to Deshaun, If the Eagles lose to 1-4 Cleveland at home coming off of a bye week, Sirianni is going to be squarely on the hot seat. So this is a hot seat alert game on the mid-card
yes,
here.
This is, you know, there's the beautiful thing about football is that you can find excuses for just about anything.
Yes.
And my favorite thing now these days where I waste time is looking at the people who are viciously 100% still in Deshaun Watson's corner. And we'll point out.
They're out there.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah. Now, I don't know how many of these are just actual like burner accounts of Deshaun right. and his staff or not.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's other bad things going on the Browns right now. So where you can make excuses enough for Deshaun Watson that, oh, hey, okay, yeah, this is Stefanski. With another coach, he'd be just fine.
Yeah.
It's just like you got all these other – nobody could operate well under this. I mean, and to be clear, Deshaun is still – there's lots of quarterbacks in the league that have issues with, on their offense and everything. But Deshaun's playing worse than all of them.
All of them.
So, but there's enough people out there making excuses that I think that at some point Haslam, the owner, who we know will listen to fans – it's the whole reason they drafted Manziel.
Yeah.
Was they're gonna blame Kevin Stefanski.
Oh, for sure. 1-5, and the schedule does not let up for these guys. The other mid-card game, and I struggle with this one, maybe putting this one further up the card. Washington at Baltimore is a fun. Any game involving the Commanders now becomes a fun game with this offense. So you got Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury heading to Baltimore. This is like a little mid-Atlantic battle. You know, they kind of live on that same little peninsula there. Battle for that capital area of the country, and a little Lamar Jackson versus Jaden Daniels action. That's a fun game right there. Washington and Baltimore.
I am, you know, we've never seen Cliff Kingsbury in the NFL as an actual just offensive coordinator where he's not also having to deal with the responsibilities of being a head coach. Mm-hmm. And Cliff Kingsbury's, you know, like I've probably learned a lot of good lessons from his time in Arizona. I'm very intrigued that this might be it's kind of a rebirth for Cliff Kingsbury if he can keep this up.
It's a good test, man. It's a really good test. Washington at Baltimore. Washington 4-1, Baltimore 3-2.
The way they ran things in Washington, or excuse me, in Arizona with Cliff Kingsbury, it was just from the stories I heard from people that, you know, had been there, was that there were just a lot of things Kingsbury did as a head coach that were not like NFL head coach type things.
Yeah.
Like the level of discipline and professionalism and everything within the building, it just wasn't what most successful NFL head coaches do. Cliff Kingsbury with an elder dude over him and an actual NFL coach,
yeah,
and with that maybe kind of guidance and and pressure perhaps, it might be the absolute best thing for Cliff Kingsbury.
So far,
and
so good.
Daniels just been playing. He's just been playing really good football. It's not gimmicky or anything. He's making good decisions. He's accurate. Like, yeah, he's doing all of it.
He's everything you'd expect in a number two overall pick for sure. Semi-main event this weekend, the Lions at the Cowboys. Lions coming off a bye week. Cowboys 3-2 on the season. That game is in Dallas. Dan Campbell going back to where he didn't play in that stadium, I don't think. But, he was a Dallas Cowboy as a player. But Detroit generally considered to be one of the two best teams in the NFC, I think. Dallas aspiring to be. It's a big game for the Cowboys, man. It's a big, big game at home for the Cowboys. Chance to make a statement.
Whatever. Did you ever follow up on the – people were trying to read CeeDee Lamb's lips as he was yelling at Dak Prescott, and Dak Prescott just kind of stood there and took it, didn't really say anything. Was there validity to that, or was that debunked?
I don't know. I couldn't read the – here's the frustrating thing about that is every tweet that I saw made it seem like it was obvious what CeeDee Lamb was saying.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't say what it was. They're like, oh, boy, look what he's saying. And I'm looking at him like, I can't tell what he's saying.
People were saying it was like mid at best, or they were mid throws. It was.
And so I honestly, Seth, I stopped caring. It's the Cowboys.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Like, I never did
but
any detective
work. We're rooting for dysfunction with the Cowboys.
Yes.
Not because it affects us necessarily all that much on a year-by-year basis, but it's just fun to watch.
Main event of the weekend. Weird to say with a game between a 3-2 team and a 2-3 team, but it's Monday Night Football, and I am fascinated to see what the post-Sala, post-Hackett play calling Jets look like in a game where they are their first game post-firing their coach, and if they win this game at home against the Bills, the suddenly kind of reeling a little bit Buffalo Bills, the Jets will be in first place in the AFC East if they win this game.
I almost wonder whether part of getting rid of Saleh, well, like without going into the whole soap opera of Aaron Rodgers and all of that goes, and whether how much input he had. I don't care. We'll never know. I think that Robert Saleh, as I told you, I was always a little bit concerned just from the Hard Knocks clips and everything that he might have tried to pit the offense and the defense against each other a little too much. There's a good, healthy competition that you want to have, but I always felt like, okay, the defensive-minded coach, Robert Saleh, was just almost rubbing it in the offense's face how good the defense was. And that's dicey. That's dicey. You want guys that are competitive and everything, but you don't want it to start to feel like us against them. Sauce Gardner had a quote where he said basically like, hey, we're still playing for him, for Robert Saleh, to do it for him.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. I wonder maybe Saleh, despite his better, you know, best wishes and better motivations or whatever, was creating a divisiveness there. And maybe it'll be different now. Who knows?
We'll see. We'll see. But that
I like
me,
Robert Saleh a lot, so it's hard for me to say, but maybe that was an issue.
Are you with me on how compelling that game is on Monday night, just based on everything swirling around the Jets and where the Bills are right now, too?
Yes, because the Jets do have, like, on paper, it looks like they could be something.
Yeah.
And so much of it has to do with Aaron Rodgers. Like, Aaron Rodgers yesterday said all the right things, said, hey, if I play better, Robert Saleh is still here.
Yep.
Yes, it's very intriguing to me. I love the interim coach bump, especially on a team that looks like they could do something if they turn a few things around.
And they did take play calling away from Nathaniel Hackett.
Yes, that as well. Right, yeah. They did the thing that people thought they should do, and people wondered whether that got Robert Saleh fired or not. At the very end of the day, at least, okay, that change was made.
They almost had to still do that. When the story got out that that's what Saleh was going to do, then they fired him. If they had given play calling duties back to Hackett, the smoke on Aaron Rodgers would have been an inferno on Aaron Rodgers.
In the morning kowtowing meeting that I'm guessing they have at the Jets, they probably have a 5-minute morning or 5-minute meeting every morning where they're like, okay, how do we kowtow to Aaron Rodgers today? Okay, well, yesterday we kowtowed to him by getting rid of Robert Saleh, who had tried to demote Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah.
But now it turns out that Aaron doesn't like this heat that he's getting, so we need to pivot and kowtow to him by demoting. Yes,
Nathaniel
this
Hackett.
Is all very good. This is all very good, productive. This is the way a good organization. Yeah, we're good. We're good, right, guys? This is the way good organizations operate, right? Okay.
What a mess. What a prison that must be.
Kowtow on three.
On three. All right, let's get to it. We do it every Friday.
You know, D'Amico always says, swarm.
What we're looking for is players, right, who are looking to swarm.
The swarm mindset, that whole mentality.
Right, we want players to have a special work ethic and a relentless mindset in everything that they do.
Who's in?
This is a special group of men, believe it.
It's the Payne and Pendergast Texans Circle of Swarm.
All right, I'm tracking this. I am keeping archives of our Circle of Swarm each week. In the Circle of Swarm, Seth and I each pick three. Swarmiest of Texan players based on recent performance and partially year-long performance and how we feel heading into this game on Sunday against the New England Patriots. This is purely subjective pain and Pendergast stuff right here is what this is.
I'm going to go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say we each pick three. I was just going to reiterate that. We each pick three.
It's my turn to pick first, isn't it?
If you want to, go ahead. I was going to let you pick first. The honor is yours, Your Honor. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Fire away.
Nobody lets me do anything, Sean. I do what I'm going to do, okay?
You do it, man.
Listen, mister. You kowtow to me right now.
That's right.
Okay, this is actually tough for who to put in first. I feel like the embodiment of Swarm last week, and this includes the way this guy's entire unit ended up playing, it was Azeez Alshire,
who
came in, just had a really bad first series after he'd spent a night in the hospital. He'd lost 10 pounds of fluids. He was physically beaten down and ill. Started off the game rough. D'Amico threatened to or told him that he was going to have to bench him if it kept looking like that. And Azeez ended up playing like he looked like he just had the best week of his life.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Azeez Alshire, first member of the Circle of Swarm, week six.
There is a play that they show. Oh, you know what? I saw it on the cinematic YouTube that the team does of the recap of the game. It's like a 6-minute video. It's really good. And it was a play where Josh Allen broke out of the pocket running to his right. Mm-hmm. And Mario Edwards Jr. is chasing him. And it's what it looks like. A defensive tackle chasing Josh Allen. And Josh Allen is clearly, you know, making separation. Azeez Alshire shoots from off the screen like a bullet. passes Mario Edwards Jr. like it's the HOV lane. And forces a bad throw by Josh Allen. Like, Azeez Alshire, east to west, you know, just covering all that ground sideline to sideline has just been a joy to watch this year, man.
Yeah, yeah, that's he's a more athletic version of D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah.
D'Amico Ryans was more of an old school thumper, but he was also sideline to sideline.
Yeah.
Azeez Alshire is the modern version of that. A little bit more athletic, sleeker, but still with an appetite for violence.
I just double checked on this one, Seth, to see if this guy has been in the circle of swarm. This is my first pick.
Okay.
And he's not yet. And I like getting a little new representation in there. And you'll like this because he wears your old number. Foley Fatakasi, number 91. I'm putting him in the circle of swarm. And it's based on big plays recently and just all-out effort. He gives great effort all the time, Foley Fatakasi.
Yeah.
But 2 weeks ago, he was crucial in the goal line stand against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Mm-hmm. The tackle for loss he had against the Bills on a screen pass was a really underrated big play in this game. At a time in the game where the Bills were getting a little momentum, they went from 1st and 10 to 2nd and 17, and the Texans were able to get off the field on that drive.
Yeah.
And I just feel like Foley Fatakasi, I feel like as the year goes on in the circle of swarm, I want to reward some of these guys who've been giving swarm-type effort, but recent weeks have been making splashy-type plays as well. So I'm putting Foley Fatakasi heading into week 7 in the circle of swarm.
It's this isn't like an MVP ranking for the team or anything like that, but just by way of he's playing and what his expectations are, he's done some really good
things. Special work ethic and relentless mindset, baby. Yeah.
All right. My next inductee into the week 6 circle of swarm. Yeah. A guy who improved on a swarmy element last week after a couple weeks ago being kind of dicey in it, Derek Stingley, and his ability and willingness to come up and be physical in the run game, and added to just his general overall coverage ability. I thought that 2 weeks ago versus the Jaguars, the Texans had some uncharacteristic plays where the cornerbacks and the defensive backs in general weren't quite playing their responsibilities and like the selfless part of it in the run game. Derek Stingley came back and did all the right things in that regard. And as D'Amico talked about this week, you got to have defensive backs that are willing to hit and willing to tackle. So Derek Stingley this week. I think it's weird. I think, he's one of the obviously better players on the team. Is this his first time in the circle?
He was in it last week, too. So this is 2 weeks in a row. These are the first 2 weeks he's been in there. I've got some
so
under
it's tough now on it, the offensive side.
I don't even think I'm going to dip into the offensive side. I might stay defense.
Okay.
Or I think the rule needs to be when he wins special teams player of the week, that Kyahmi Fairbairn is in the circle of swarm. You kick a game winning 59. He's been in it before. He was in it the first time we ever did the circle of swarm.
Mm-hmm.
Included a kicker. That's how good a season Kyahmi Fairbairn. You look at Kyahmi Fairbairn's field goal log. I've got it in front of me here. He's kicked a total of 11 field goals this year. 8 of them are 50 yards or longer.
Yeah.
The other 3 are 47, 47, and he's got a 30-yard chip shot from the Jacksonville game. That's incredible.
What was his miss?
His miss was from 54 against Minnesota.
Yeah.
So he is having the best season, certainly at this stage, of any kicker in Texans history. He's got the most 50-plus yard field goals, 8 through 5 weeks, of any kicker ever in the history of football.
I think the biggest wish I would have for Kyahmi is that I would just hope he's never eligible for the award again the rest of the season.
Right.
If the offense could start Right. Just actually, you know, using their brains when they're at the 40-yard line instead of just stalling out in that area of the field. Let's just go ahead and keep on pushing. Let's keep going.
Correct.
We're like the Donner Party here.
Yes.
You know? It's
not just the 59-yarder to win. He kicked a 50 and a 47 in that game also. Like, he's automatic, man. So we got to recognize him somehow. If the league's going to give him a trophy, then we're going to give him a swarmy. Right here. So Kaimi is my second pick. Who do you got for your last pick, Seth?
My last pick. Now, CJ Stroud is falling precariously close to being out of the circle of swarm this week.
Mm-hmm.
This is dicey. I don't want him to be out of the circle of swarm.
Bad fourth quarter, man.
And yet, part of this is a little bit aspirational on this part, too. I want to give a guy a little bit of taste of love and respect, knowing that he's got a big test in front of him this week.
Yep.
Stephon Diggs.
Okay, I like that one.
Stephon Diggs.
Okay.
If anything, for just his overall durability throughout his career, which is so crucial right now that he stay healthy. Nico, Tank, I have no idea how many games they're going to play for the rest of the season. I need Stephon Diggs to play every single game for the rest of the season. And mostly for Stephon Diggs' willingness to be really, in a lot of ways, in the same role he was in Buffalo last year, the short and intermediate guy where Stephon really started to chafe against it. He's not showing any signs of buckling or disliking it or anything, and then he's got an opportunity this week to maybe be a little bit more of a deep threat and to get a little bit more of the glory. Yep. So for his relatively blue-collar, workman-like approach to this season so far, and for him trying real hard to do all the right things and say all the right things from a leadership standpoint, Stephon Diggs.
Stephon Diggs is a good one. I thought about Diggs. That's a good one. My last one, I'm struggling with a couple of them here, and these are guys who are not normally guys getting a ton of accolades on defense, but they've shown up the last couple of weeks. I'm going to go with Henry Toa Toa just because the position is a swarm-type position, and I think Toa Toa has exceeded expectations so far this year. He does play with the swarm mentality. Like, he throws himself in there, and I think he's had a good season so far. So this is a partial good game against Buffalo, but overachieving expectations and playing the swarm type of football and hoping that he does more of it because they got no depth at linebacker right now. Similar to what you're doing with Diggs, a little bit of incentive. Give him a taste of that confectionary sugar, and he comes back for more. Henry Toa Toa is my final pick for the circle.
Okay, so no CJ Stroud in the circle of swarm. I had multiple people come at me during the game after CJ's intentional grounding penalty, saying like, okay, well, there's no way in hell. You guys don't have the guts to leave him out of the circle of swarm, do you? My gut after the game was, hell yeah, he's in the circle of swarm.
That.
I'm keeping him in the circle of swarm, and lo and behold, here he is. He's out because you decided to go with Henry Toa Toa instead of the guy who actually won the game for you. Okay. All right.
No, I picked the guy that won the game for us, Kaimi Fairbairn. He's in there.
Yeah. But you chose, I can't put both linebackers in the circle of swarm when they're still, the front seven is not doing a bang-up job down in and down out versus the run. They're letting up too much chunk yardage in the run game.
Okay, I'm going to tell you who my other pick would have been, then I got a bone to pick with you.
Yeah.
Eric Murray has played really well for this team the last couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
He's had some good plays in pass coverage. He's had some big pass breakups on third down to get the team off the field. Mm-hmm. That was my honorable mention. That was the other one I was thinking about.
He received votes, okay.
He also received votes. Now here's my bone I got to pick with you. If I'm going to let you go first in this, okay?
Yeah.
You can't take the fact that I'm going last and put it on me that CJ Stroud's not in there. Like, oh, Sean could have put him in there. Last chance.
Hey.
You can't do that, man.
I'm just explaining how CJ Stroud, the best player on the team, ended up out of the... I'm not blaming you. I'm just explaining to the listener that I trusted that... I thought that Sean would put CJ Stroud in the circle of trust. I assumed that he would. My mistake was in trusting you. I'm not blaming you, Sean. I'm telling the listeners
it's
my fault for trusting you. Okay.
Oh, okay. Is that what you're doing?
Yes. Your faults as a swarm committee member are actually my failings as a father.
That's right, Ben. During the break, can you come get the knife out?
I smother you with a pillow.
Can you come get that knife out of my back during the break, Ben? That was harsh. So apparently, and we've got like 50 texts of people confirming, CeeDee Lamb said to Dak Prescott, jump ball. I got you. Yeah.
Oh, so okay. Gotcha.
Basically saying throw it up to
so
him.
So he's basically saying like, hey, we're cool. Or you're just do that or whatever. Okay.
Just do that. Yeah. Yeah.
I assumed it was probably these people are getting a little crazy. Now there's like AI lip readers that people are just trusting 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
CJ should be the designated hitter for the Circle of Swarm. We're not doing stipulations for the Circle of Swarm. We've already got all kinds of extra stips for the Circle of Trust.
Making it six is tough.
It's clean, though. I like it. Like, it's exclusive.
This is my least favorite Circle of Swarm. I feel like I did a little too much of Attaboys in this one. Yeah. Like, I'll give you a Circle of Swarm.
I picked Fatakasi, Toa Toa, and the kicker. Okay.
Yeah. You this is the problem. Fatakasi and Toa Toa are both guys that I feel like you're giving them an attaboy. And for playing above expectations in some regards.
Maybe.
And yet, when it comes to total swarmitude, they're not. Neither of those guys are on the level of C.J. Stroud.
They're not, but at least I've got, for Fatakasi at least, I've got examples of huge plays that he's made in the last couple of games. Toa take umbrage too. That's fine. If you want to take,
okay.
Fatakasi, I think, deserves to be. Like, Fatakasi's made a couple big plays the last couple of weeks. If it was just guys who were really good, it would be like largely the same six guys every week. You know what I mean? Like, I like to have a little bit of recognition for, bam, huge play.
For the swarminess of it.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of an underdog thing going on there, too.
A little bit. Like, so, all right. Combo.
Now, I know moving forward, we got to keep the underdog element in there, that this is as much about spirit and pluck as it is about actual performance.
Okay. Someone says, I'm putting y'all in the Circle of Swarm for the great pregame foreplay. Keep up the good work, fellas. That's not four, but it's a pregame show. If you view it as foreplay, then
it is. We spend 3 hours. It's like, Sean, you tell any lady, like, hey, before we get to the real action, we're going to have 3 hours of talking, of discussing your hopes and dreams for what might happen. Just a little bit of, you know, just doing all the right things for 3 hours. Yeah, I think they'd approve, Sean.
That's a lot of work. Oof. Texans foreplay presented by it's Texans Countdown. Okay,
we do a 3 hour pregame show for a 3 hour game.
Yep.
A 1-to-1 ratio there of foreplay to action. That's pretty damn good.
That's a full
day.
Anyone
to tell you anything 1-to-1 or greater is yes, please.
That's a full day. All right. Yeah. There's our Circle of Swarm this week. Very defensive Circle of Swarm. Azeez, Fatakasi, Stingley, Henry Toa Toa, Kymie Fairbairn, Stephon Diggs.
And that's true. Yeah, big picture, that's how it should go.
The
defense has been much more swarm-like than the offense in general.
And even like if we factor like the recency part too, like these last two wins have been defensive wins, not offensive wins. You know.
Yeah.
In terms of the if we're combining the season with the last couple of weeks. All right. Okay. Maybe I'm being petty on a Friday. Tuesday's our petty day. CBSSports.com put out a mock draft that if this happens, it would be the funniest thing to happen this offseason. If this happens, please, God.
So excited.
Let this happen. I'll tell you what it is coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
Tuesday is usually the day where we reserve some time to be petty. Seth and I can be petty at any time, but Tuesday is usually the day where we specifically reserve 8 o'clock to be petty. So maybe this would have been best saved for Tuesday, but boy, for something like this, I just can't wait. And it's a hypothetical, so it may not happen. It probably won't happen. But as of right now, it would appear that the Cleveland Browns are well on their way to having a top 5 pick in this draft. They had their Vegas win total revised downward from 8.5 to 4.5 over the last week. If your Vegas win total is 4.5, you are a bad football team. You know who else has a 4.5 win total in Vegas for the futures bets? The New England Patriots, who the Texans are favored by a touchdown against in New England this weekend. The Cleveland Browns are bad. So there's already mock drafts out there for next spring. It's kind of fun clicking them, and you have to page down and down and down and down and down, and you don't get to the Texans till like pick 29. That's kind of fun. It's been a long time since that's been the case. Now, they got to keep winning games. I don't want to, you know, the Texans are not part of this topic. I'm just pointing out the fact that it's fun being good at football again. Picking third. Hey, Ben, get the draft sounder ready here. The Browns have the third pick in this mock draft, Seth, which is that's what they're on track for right now. Deshaun Watson is about to get them a pick that might net them the replacement for Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
And if that is...
He's doing his best to recoup his own trade value.
Yes. That's a great way to...
like, listen, I know I haven't really kept up my end of the bargain here, but I'm going to try to like get some of this back for you.
I'm going to get you as much draft capital back as I possibly can by being an historically bad quarterback. If this were to happen with the third pick, oh my God. All right, so with the third pick in the CBSSports.com middle of October mock draft, the Cleveland Browns select Shedeur Sanders,
quarterback,
Colorado.
Yes.
Holy crap. Because here's what you need to know is that this, unless the Browns are willing to take an historic cap hit, like over $170 million, they're not cutting Deshaun and shifting over to Shedeur. Like, Deshaun is going to be on the Browns for at least another year, if not two, because of how much dead money there is attached to him. Like,
it would be too hard to actually function.
Yeah, you can't field a roster.
A team.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But to have the... And so them drafting a quarterback would be logical. Deshaun's just going to have to deal with it, whoever they draft. Them drafting a quarterback is a highly logical thing to do, the Cleveland Browns, if they get a high pick. And there's quarterbacks worth drafting up there. I know you've brought up the point many times. Teams are reaching on guys these days with high picks. But in the general sense, and by the way, Shedeur would be the first quarterback taken in this particular mock draft. His teammate, Travis Hunter, goes first to New England, who already has a quarterback with Drake May. Cincinnati's picking second in this draft. They're married to Joe Burrow. Dude. Deshaun Watson, emo as he is, with not only his replacement on the roster, but his replacement having the most helicopter-ish of helicopter dads, a Hall of Famer with a loud voice, Deion Sanders. Like, Deion Sanders, Shedeur Sanders, and Deshaun Watson all in the same building has to happen. This has to happen.
If you look at the way this mock draft, just the way it is right now, I think they put some trades in here, but if this draft order, like with these trades already in and everything, let's just say hypothetically, it goes New England, likely not going to take a quarterback, Bengals, not going to take a quarterback. Then you get to the Browns, the Rams, the Jaguars, and the Panthers. I feel like Deion would be doing everything he could to angle Shedeur to the Rams.
Yes.
And... that's probably the most likely scenario. If this were the draft order, I think Deion would figure out a way to get Shedeur to the Rams if the Rams so chose to take him or wanted him.
Yep.
And I don't know. That's I guess the whole sideshow element of just Shedeur's willingness to throw his teammates under the bus. There's that. There's Deion and the circus that brings. I don't know. Is that the most likely scenario that he would end up with the Rams, and would the Rams actually want Shedeur Sanders?
I don't know. The overall likeliness of the scenario, forget about teams for a second, of Deion figuring out a way to get Shedeur out of what this mock draft says is firmly in play. I think you're spot on with that. There's a few other people weighing in on the text page saying the same thing. Shedeur would do an Eli Manning. He would never play for Cleveland. Text message, Deion would not allow that. Text message, facts, Seth. Somebody agreeing with you. I'm with you. I don't think it ever happens, but man, just to put myself in a headspace yesterday, seeing this and envisioning a world in which Deshaun Watson has to deal with potentially being the backup for Shedeur Sanders is so fun.
The problem with the Browns right now, it's almost, you know, like when you're watching an action movie and there's like a 9-minute car chase. And it's really good, and like all the special effects are awesome. But after a while, you're just kind of like, all right, okay, can we? That's enough. I've had enough of this car chase. Just end this car chase now. That's how I feel about the Browns right now. I can't sit here and watch. It's like watching fight videos on social media. Like after a while, you're just like, all right, this is affecting me. This is turning me into somebody that I'm not.
Wild?
I can't watch this bludgeoning of the Browns any longer.
Isn't that wild? Like that. I mean, when that trade got made, I thought there was a decent chance that the Texans would end up winning the trade. I had no idea it would end up being just the complete trouncing on both sides, that the Texans would turn into this and that the Browns would turn into that.
And with Dylan Horton coming in back and playing last week, quite shockingly, remember, I had, Sean, I did a little video, just I showed some of Dylan Horton's better plays from the game last week.
Yeah,
he had
good.
15 snaps in the game.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people that weren't aware that he had stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Right.
It's not just, I mean, the fact that he was back playing football and doing some good things in that game was incredible. But on the petty side of things, that completed the circle of all of the players that trade has yielded on the Texan side are currently active NFL players still. The one guy, the defensive tackle from Stanford.
Thomas Booker
is still out there and playing. He's not with the Texans. The other guys are all still on the Texans and actually playing either well or putting in promising performances. It never works out that way. It never works out that way, and yet here we are.
Yeah, just wild. Shedeur Sanders to Cleveland. Make it happen, football gods. That's all I ask. I don't ask for much. And give the Texans a Super Bowl. That would be good, too. Matt Burke spoke with the media yesterday. Let's get the Texans' defensive coordinator scouting report. Let's start to look ahead a little more to the Patriots here through the eyes of the defensive coordinator of the Houston Texans. What's he seeing, rookie Drake May? We'll hear from Matt Burke, and that is coming up next.